Hello, hello, world, and welcome to another episode of the Colombian Catwoman podcast. And we continue with our series of Black expats in Spain. And on today's show, we have got the lovely Kayla, who doesn't live in Madrid, which is where all the other Black expats seem to be. Hey there, Kayla, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeanette. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for responding to my call to action. So thank you for being here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Kayla, and where you're located? And you're not in Madrid, so where are you located?
Yes. Okay. So I'm actually located in Saragossa, which before I got here, I didn't even know what that was, but it's equal distance between Barcelona and Madrid. So that's pretty much all I that's the value that it has in the city itself. That's the recognition it has.
And just roughly, what you do or how long have you been there? Is there anything else that you'd like to, share at this moment in time?
Yeah, so I came to Spain after graduating. Actually, I came before I graduated college to teach English here. I was just really looking for a way to live in a different country, and this was the one that was actually paying me as opposed to me having to pay for it at the time. And yeah, I was really surprised by the idea that people are paying to go somewhere and then not work. Like, I don't know, that idea was so foreign to me. I've been working since I was 14, so I needed somewhere where I can work and like actually have a life as opposed to just putting my life on pause and just waiting it out in a different country. And I was able to do that with the language assistant program here.
Okay, so when did you arrive in Spain? How long have you been in the country for?
I've been here since 2016, so 6 years.
Wow, okay. How long ago was it that you were working as a teaching assistant or in the education sector, and kind of how, when did you transition away from that?
So I started 2016, and 2020 was my last year working as a language assistant. So that was 2019 to 2020 was the school year that I finished up in. I actually didn't even finish my application process for that year because I was intending to start my business that school year and just kind of go out on a limb and not do the program, but they still ended up assigning me to a position, and it happened to be like right next to my house. Like I can hear the school bells from my house, and I was just like, well,
Might as
that's
well.
too. Yeah, it's just kind of easy money after you've been doing it for, I guess it was 4 years at that point. And so I just went ahead and took the position since it was placed in front of me, even though I tried to deny it. Sometimes I just feel like you gotta go with fate. So I feel like that's worked for me so far. So I just took it and it did work out because then, I quit my job that I had. I was working for a company based out of Texas, and I quit that job so I could start my business in February of 2020. And we all know what happened in March of 2020. So having that income of the school, the language assistant was really, really useful. So fate was working in my favor.
Okay, perfect. So the universe basically had your back and
Yeah, for
protected
sure.
you. So did you basically start in Zaragoza and you just stayed there? Is that what happened?
Yeah, I got placed here in Saragossa, and I didn't have like any specific requirements on where I ended up. I just kind of wanted to be here, and I didn't know anything about Saragossa, but once I got here, it was nice. It was like a livable city, and I prefer that to a really touristic place. I'm from Houston, Texas, which is a very livable city as well. Well, that's debatable, but in terms of it
Very.
being like a very big city, that's not touristic. And so it was very comparable, and also within like, I don't know, I got here in September, and by November I met the guy I'm married to now. So things happen quickly around here.
So Zaragoza has been a great fit for you, we can say.
Yeah, it's been serving me everything that I need here, so.
That's fantastic to hear. I actually went to Zaragoza like don't know, 25 years ago. I'm an old woman, jeans, but I'm an old woman, you know, black don't crack. And it was a summer camp with the YMCA. And I remember like being in this field, and it was maybe like one of my first experiences away from home in that type of setting. And I remember saying to one of the leaders, can I have some change? Do you have any like change for this note? And they're like, what do you want change for? I said, to phone home, to phone my mum. They said, we're not going anywhere until like Friday. And it was Sunday at that time on Monday. And I just burst into tears.
Oh, no.
But I remember it being very green. That's what I remember about Zaragoza. I don't know whether that's just where we were, but that's what I remember about the place.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, here in the region, there are some parts that are surprisingly green. The city, though, is very brown.
Okay.
Yeah, it gets very brown here. I remember when I first flew to Spain, I landed in Barcelona, and I took a bus from Barcelona to Zaragoza, and you could just see the drastic difference as I came into Zaragoza from Barcelona. Mm-hmm. It just got darker, grayer and grayer as I got here.
Wow, okay. So you are now an entrepreneur living your life in Spain. What is your business? Do you want to talk about what it is that you do? Do you want to kind of let us know what it is that you do and put your services out there if you want to?
Sure. So my business is the Elite VA. I have a couple of different things, but my main gig is the Elite VA, which is a virtual assistant service that I provide. It's full service for small to middle-sized businesses, ideally BIPOC owned, ideally female owned or female identifying owned, because I just love to see those businesses thrive. And that's what I'm here for. I realize that, you know, I've worked for a lot of different companies, but I just didn't care. Like, it's hard to work somewhere where you don't care about the objectives that they have put in front of you. Like, you have no skin in the game. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I most definitely have skin in the game when it comes to us and our businesses and our economy, wherever in the world that is. So
thank you, sister. I'm saying thank you from all of the sisters for your services. So well done. How have you found that working here, that transition? And so this is up to you whether you want to talk about being an autonomo here and the services that are available for self-employed people here. You know, go into that as much as you want to, if you have gone through that route or not, being a freelancer.
Yeah. In Spain. I've actually done a lot of different things trying to be an entrepreneur and trying to figure out like where my places and all of this, because I knew that I wanted to work. I wanted to be doing something for myself, but I just didn't know what it was. And so I'm a trained chef. And so I definitely thought that I was going to be doing that. And so when I quit my job in 2020, I actually was quitting it to do cooking classes for kids in English, you know, just to give them a different way of learning English outside of just a book. And here is the grammar. It was a fantastic idea, but it turns out that for me, like, cooking is very personal, food is very personal to me, and I prefer to separate that from my economy, my financial status, and have it just be the thing that I love. So I put that aside after trying and everything, but I learned so much from that I built a business plan and I got financing, and I couldn't believe that I did that here in Spain, but I did. Turns out I didn't need it, and so I just gave it back. But I did it, and that's the point.
Those are the kind of things that I want to know, because I'm somebody who wants to. I'm kind of a novice entrepreneur, so but I want to go past that mark of being a novice entrepreneur, and I've written these plans here in Spain, and you know, been to the Chamber of Commerce and the Confederation of Businesses as well. But kind of not being able to move past certain barriers. So when you got the finance, was that from here in Spain, or was it from, you know, was it US finance that you were able to secure? Where was the finance from?
Yeah, I got it from here in Spain. And it must have been the pandemic that had me like hallucinating to think that I could do that, because I've walked into banks before and just like inquired about stuff just to kind of get information about like, how does this work? Right. Like, I want to buy a home here one day. I want to do this and that. And I don't know how things work here. And so I remember going into a bank one time and asking about like the process of home buying and like, and all of that. And they just kind of looked at me like, what are you doing? Like, why would you need that? You know, like, what makes you think that you can get that? And who knows why they would question me trying to get a home loan. It could be anything. Maybe it's the color of my eyes. I don't know. But, but yeah, so, you know, it's just not a welcoming environment when I feel like anytime I've tried to speak to people in Spain about Spanish people, I should say, because when I try and speak to expats or, you know, people from different places, that it's a different story. But yeah, when I try to like infiltrate the system, like it just feels like it's rejecting me pretty hard in a lot of ways. I know I'm not the only one on that.
I submitted the business plan to La Caixa. So I'm based in the Canary Islands. I'm based in Gran Canaria. And I went through the process of the certificate of viability for a business idea that I wanted to submit. I wanted to start. And here in Gran Canaria, they only work with, to offer micro loans, they only work with La Caixa Bank. And so I submitted the loan, not the loan application, business plan for the plan to be reviewed. And my application at that stage was denied because we were still going through the pandemic. So I basically hit a brick wall, and I just feel that I haven't been able to move past that. So that's great that you were able to secure funding and you didn't really go looking for it by the sounds of what you said. Is that right?
Yeah, I just started with a business plan. I had reached out to a banker, and the thing is, like, they want to get, like, when they give you money, they get money. And so I think that it has to be, I know it's not all mindset, and so I would never be so audacious to say, like, it's just your mindset. No, it's not that. Like, this system is not built for us to thrive here, but we still have to go in thinking that it's going to happen. We have to move through any system, right, that we're in with the confidence and the audacity to actually believe that we got it and that we can make it happen. And so I just kind of did that. I did my business plan. I reached out to this banker, and she told me to she told me to do these steps or whatever. I did do it over the phone, so I don't know if that had any impact on her initial interaction with me. I don't know, but then I just did the business plan, and my business plan was probably more elaborate than most of the business plans that she receives. That was my impression from her reaction to my business plan. I did a full blown business plan. Everything that I could possibly think of was in there. And I got approved for a smaller amount than what I needed, which in hindsight, that's fantastic. It gave me just experience. But I just did it, and I turned in the paperwork, and, you know, I got accepted. I got accepted. And if it hadn't, in the cases, the way that I think about it, I just, like, if I don't get accepted for these sorts of things when I put myself out there, I just have to do it again. Like, somebody's going to say yes. Like, we've all tried to get a bank account here in Spain, right? We know how it goes. You just keep trying until somebody gets you the bank account, right?
The bank account wasn't the problem for me, to be fair. When I landed, my situation was very different. I understand what you're saying. Just one door isn't opening. Just try another one. So it's great that you have that experience. I also think it's to do with the mindset of where you are based, and also to do with the business that you know, the plan that you had. Maybe your business was related to a different field, and mine was related to tourism. And I live on an island that's basically that lives off of tourism. And we were in the midst of the pandemic, and things were like not moving. But it's a very different process, also in terms of what you're saying. So mine had to go through the advisor in the bank here, La Caixa Bank, because that's the way that it works here. So I went to the Confederation, I did the business plan, we did all the numbers. I've never done that in my life, and it was so great to do it, to run the numbers and to understand how much you need to make, how much you need to sell, how much you need to break even, and then how much you can make, and then how much you need to make, you know, year on year. And I've never done that before as a novice entrepreneur, but running through the numbers has been a great learning curve for me. And then getting that certificate, handing over the plan with the certificate, with all the numbers, you know, the 5-year financial plan. And here, went off to the main office, maybe on the mainland is where that would have been. And then they assessed the application. at that stage and whether it then goes further. And so maybe it's to do with, you know, the factors that I've just mentioned, that you're on the mainland, also the fact that, you know, your business ID was probably not tourism related during the midst of the pandemic. It seems as though you had closeness of who you were dealing with, and they kind of were like, maybe it was a different type of product as well, a different type of loan application. They were able to say, you know, yes or no, where mine went through different stages. So it was harder to kind of get that contact with whoever was making that assessment. But it's great that you had a positive experience. I want to talk about love and relationships and friendships. So we're going to put it all in the one. You found your now husband. And I know that I've seen the pictures, but I just want to confirm your husband is black. Is that correct?
He is what?
Black.
Yes, he is. He's okay. From Colombia.
Okay. So, did you go out dating, looking for love here in Spain? Were you out there dating? If yes, did color matter? If no, kind of how did it all come about that you found your now husband? Congratulations.
Thank you. So, I was very comfortable being very single before I got here, and I was just living it up. Like I just like having a king size bed and just being able to splay out on it is, there's nothing like it. Right. And once you get comfortable with it, like you, it's hard to think about making efforts to occupy space in your bed. At least for me, it was. So I really wasn't concerned about that at all. I came here and my whole state of mind was like, oh my god, how am I gonna survive here? You're kind of just coming out here blind, Kayla, what are you doing? But after I got settled, for the first time in a long time, I actually felt, it just occurred to me, I was like, okay, I'm ready to date him. Like, and it was surprising because I hadn't been at all before. It's just like, no, that doesn't sound like fun. But yeah, I went on, I don't know, I feel like when I tell a story, some people will hate me. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. You're about to say, I went on two dates and found my husband. Is that what you're about to say? Yeah.
I think I went, like, I was on Tinder. I'm pretty sure it was Tinder at the time. And maybe I went on dates with maybe three different guys. And then I think I went on a couple of dates with a couple of them or whatever. And I mean, they were nice guys, but just no. They were no's for me. And I was going back from Tenerife. I was reading Half of a Yellow Sun, which is not a love story, mind you, but there was like
Amanda Ngozi. That's incredible. Amanda Bird.
Everything she writes, like, I'll gobble it up. I love it.
Everything that comes out of her mouth is perfect.
Yeah, she speaks in poetry. Like, I don't understand. Anyways, so we should have a podcast just about her. But yeah, I was reading it, and there's like a love story, or I can't even call it a love story. Like, that whole relationship story in that book is, it's all a mess. But she was describing the feelings of love at some point while I was sitting on the beach in Tenerife, and I was just like, dang, I want that. I want that feeling. And so I got back on Tinder while I was there. I ended up getting into my messages, and I was like, oh, what happened to that guy? You kind of like lose track sometimes of who you've spoken to, who you haven't. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they just kind of fall off. And so there was this guy on there that was like, he was cute. What happened to him? And I messaged him on my way back from Tenerife, and we set up a date for like that week. And I was nervous as I was walking up to Plaza España to meet him, which was so weird. Like, I was like trembling, nervous, and I didn't know why. And then I knew why, of course. Something big was about to happen. So,
wow. So, did you have a criteria in terms of the guys that you were looking for? Were you open to, you know, white and everything else in between, or were you only looking for, you know, black guys? Were you open to love in every sense of the word?
Yeah, I was open. I've dated a lot of Hispanic guys. I can't say I've dated guys of all different backgrounds. I've dated a lot of Hispanic guys, back in Texas. And so I was open. I didn't have any like qualms with the idea of dating a Spanish guy. And at that time, I didn't even have the concept of like Spanish being white as opposed to it not being Latino, which are very different things. Now, it just never
Culturally,
occurred to me. Yeah, but it would not have been the same as my experiences dating Latinos or dating a Spanish guy, not at all. And so I was open because I really didn't know I was getting myself into. Honestly, in hindsight, I'm glad of the choices that I've made. because, as we've gone through these years, there's been times things have gotten hard in the United States and racially and all that stuff. And even though I'm here, I'm feeling it, I'm struggling with it as well. And I cannot imagine having done that with someone who I hadn't kind of like screened for that subject matter beforehand. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, I would not have screened. I would not have been asking those same hard questions of the person I'm dating. And my husband, he's from a different country. He has a different culture. And so there's a lot of things that we do match up on, but there's a lot of things that we don't understand from one another. And I've had to learn about his culture and his perspective, and he's had to learn about mine. And so it's not like we haven't had to do the work. That has not been the case.
That's any relationship, I imagine. What part of Colombia is your husband from?
Which country is that?
No, what part of Colombia is your husband from? I'm not sure what's going on there. What part?
From Buenaventura, which is close to Cali.
That's a hot spot for a number of different reasons, but a great part of Colombia. Colombia is an incredible country.
Have you been to Cali?
I've been to Cali, but I didn't go up to Chocó or to that side. I didn't go over there. Yeah. Government warnings at the time, the UK government was like, don't go there unless you need to that part. It's a bit of a hot spot for the fact that it's an entry point into the country. But I'd love to go there, and people go there to do the whale watching as well in that part of Colombia. So that's kind of what it's also famous for. And there's, a lot of big movement happening in Spain in terms of like pro-blackness, and it's coming out from there and also from the Caribbean coast of Colombia. So I love that country. It's an incredible country, is what I have to say there.
I'm kind of inkling that you might have an affinity for Colombia, but what it could have been that clued me in.
I am the Colombian Catwoman. That's the name that I go by because I lived in Colombia. I lived on the Caribbean coast. I live in Cartagena. And so whilst there, I then went there with the intention of adopting human beings, children, left Colombia with 4 cats. It just, life is like that sometimes. And I still have 3 of them, so I am the Colombian Catwoman for that reason. I'm really with some parts of Colombia, but it's a huge country and, so much to do and to see. So have you had a chance to connect with the country?
Yeah. Sorry if you can hear any background noise here. Okay. We'll cry and baby here.
Okay, congratulations on that as well. Have you been to Colombia? Have you had a chance to go there?
Actually, I had an affinity for Colombia myself before I even met my husband. It was the first country that I traveled to outside of the United States. My best friend is Colombian, and so I had the honor of going with her to Colombia. It had been years since she'd been back. It was her first time going back since she moved to the United States as a child. And that's just such an honor. And I don't know if people really understand the depth of that, or the breadth of that, because she's going back to her home and she invited me along with her. And I got to stay in her family's home with her tías and tíos and abuelas. And it was just an emotional experience for her of what she was experiencing. And
Wow, that's huge. That's huge. So I'm assuming that you speak Spanish. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely.
Did you learn it before you left the States, or how did you learn Spanish? Where did you learn it?
Yeah, I actually majored in it in university. Mm-hmm. I've always been another affinity of mine. I've always had affinity for Spanish language because Texas, Texas, when I was very little, a lot of my babysitters only spoke Spanish, which really doesn't matter when you're when you're taking care of children, like, it doesn't matter what language you speak, they speak human. So
doing a good job.
But yeah, so I remember them putting shows on, like Chava El Ocho, and me just loving all these shows, not knowing what was going on. But I think it really had an impact on my ability to learn language later, even though I didn't learn the language then. I've always had my teachers in high school and in college who were always so surprised by my accent or how quickly I picked up things. And even in French, I was told the same thing. And so I think just being exposed to different languages at an early age
definitely really had an impact. Mind and so on in the learning process. That's fantastic. So I would imagine that that helped you in terms of integrating into the culture. Was that something that you have? Is that something that you've been able to do? Do you want to do that? And I would imagine that the language abilities have helped you, your language abilities have helped you.
Surprisingly, no. I don't feel like it helped me at all here in Spain, because I was learning, you know, Spanish from Latin Americans, or Latin American Spanish, whether it be Mexican or Colombian, all these different influences. None of it was Spain Spanish influences. And so a lot of the language that I had was not, I mean, the words are the same, yes, but like I couldn't understand people because the accent was different. Anytime the accent changes, I'm completely thrown off. And so I was very lost, but I can only imagine that I had some sort of privilege as opposed to people who are coming here with no Spanish background at all. So I recognize that. But no, I was very lost. I was very lost for a long time.
Happened to me the first time I went to Mexico, like, do I really speak Spanish? Do I really understand it? Do I teach this subject? Because like when you, because the language is so wide, and there are so many synonyms, it's so rich, and there are so many variations. Yeah, it can be a challenge. So have you been able to make friends, you know, Spanish friends in Zaragoza? And have you wanted to? Have you been able to kind of integrate into the culture there?
So my priority hasn't been making Spanish friends, and that hasn't happened completely naturally for me. When I first got here, you know, during the aux years, all my friends will leave every year, and that is heartbreaking. Like, summertime for somebody who has like only aux friends and is staying is a hard time. Mm-hmm. Like, what month is it? September? No, August is like the most depressing month of the year for someone who's living that lifestyle. But yeah, so I, after a while, I was like, no more oxes. Like, that's where it was like an easy resource for, no offense to oxes, it's just for my own like emotional health. Like, I needed to have friends that I knew were going to stick around, because it's like breaking up with someone every single year. You get close to someone, you lose your closest friends here. So my goals or my objectives are really to make friends who are establishing their lives here, as opposed to people who are here temporarily. I mean, we can still hang out, but I'm not gonna lie, as soon as I hear someone saying, oh, I'm here like for the season, I'm like, oh, okay, we can continue to talk, but that's fine.
Have you made, do you feel part of the culture there, essentially? Do you feel like, you know, people know you, you know, people, you've got people that can call on, you've got, you know, somebody to look after your baby if you need to, or if you needed to, do you feel that you've got that where you are, community?
Yeah, well, first I have Richard's family, his mom and siblings and aunts, they all live here, so I'm blessed to have adopted that family. And that's fantastic, that's family, which is just gold. But as far as friendships, yeah, I have some long-term friendships, that sounds strange to me, but yeah, I have some like friendships that have lasted, as in they've stayed here and I stayed here, so it's been great. And then I've had some new friendships with these changes that have happened in my life currently. I feel like when you have a change happening, that's like a great time to start making new friends or adding new friends. I don't mean just getting rid of the old ones. But yeah, because there's always other people who are at that same stage in their life. So when I got pregnant, that was a very lonely time for me, and I needed friends who could understand that journey. And I found them, thankfully. And yeah, that's the whole addition to my community that I've had here. And but all of them, I'm trying to think of all my friends, like the demographic is mostly expat from all over the world, which I love. I love that so much. Okay. There's just something that diversity just does for my soul. So
definitely, and for the mind as well. So how was your experience being pregnant in Spain, having a child in Spain, registering and the whole of that? How was your pregnancy in Spain?
It was confusing and it was difficult and just nerve-wracking. Because being pregnant, I think, is nerve-wracking in general, doing it. And you're just kind of going into a blind, and you know, you can have your mom and your grandma who've done it, but they haven't done it today. Mm-hmm. So that's always going to be difficult. But yeah, just being here and the communication styles here are so different. And dealing with the medical system here is a lot. Their communication, they just don't have any like bedside manner from my experience, which is not okay. Like when you're dealing with people's health, you're telling them about what's going to happen to their future child, or you know, their bodies or their lives. Like there should definitely be more tact in that. So I was definitely pushed into my doctor was like insisting that I was going to have a C-section from the time I was 6 months pregnant.
Okay. For no other reason other than convenience, was it? Or were there like, you know, medical reasons as to why it would have been beneficial to have had a C-section?
Yeah,
more convenient for them, or?
Yeah, we can get into it all. This is information I've actually like recorded a video that I want to put on YouTube about this because I want to share it, but I just hate editing videos and like YouTube is just not my jam. So look, this is perfect.
Thank you.
I feel like people need to know this information because I was looking for it. I was on YouTube trying to find other expats who have gone through something like this in here. And I found one woman, and I wish I knew her name right now, but I don't think she still posts, but the post that she did, even though it wasn't like a long-term thing that she was posting all the time, or she continued to do, but they were so valuable to me. So I just thank you to her if she ever ends up listening to this. I'm sure she knows that she's the only person who had anything back in 2021. my experience, yeah, what were we talking about? Oh, so I was 6 weeks. I said 6 months, but at 6 weeks pregnant, they were already telling me that I was going to have a C-section, which is just so, it's too early. It's just too early to have that sort of confidence about me having to go through an extreme procedure in order to give birth, which I wanted to do vaginally. And I wanted to do without drugs, but then I had a contraction and I was like, oh, never mind.
With the drugs.
Yeah. But yeah, so because I have fibroids, which are very common, specifically very common in women of African descent, right? Yeah.
And they're, if you haven't had children before.
Yeah, it's difficult and it can cause a lot of problems. And it's a lot of times it's just about the physical state of them, as opposed to the fibroid itself isn't cancerous or anything like that. It's just that where it is can cause problems with your reproduction. Mm-hmm. And so I was just worried about my baby being able to survive and all of that. And she just wasn't making me feel any more confident about that at all.
Were you in the public health system or private health system?
So I was in, because I was such an anxious pregnant woman, I was in both. I wanted to get two opinions to see what was happening. Mm-hmm. And the private is the one that was pushing me to the C-section.
Okay. And actually, ching.
Maybe, yeah. And statistically, okay, they do have higher numbers, slightly higher numbers of C-section or intervention during pregnancy or birth than the public. So that was interesting.
Okay. And how was the actual, like, other than being hugely traumatic experience, I would imagine, but did you go with private or the public for the birth of your child, and how was that experience? Did you feel better on the day? Was it like, okay, did you get what you need? Were you treated well? Were you happy?
Yeah, so because I was getting such like negative response so early on, and not to say a C-section is negative, it's just, I mean, it's an invasive procedure and it's not
who
the
wants
go-to.
one? Nobody wants one.
Yeah, and so I don't want anyone to who gets a C-section or has to get a C-section or decides to get a C-section to feel any judgment at all. That is to each one of us to decide or to have to make those decisions. But I did not want that. I did not want that as my first option. And so I got a doula. I got a doula. And she helped me. She just helped me kind of like understand what was going on, like what the system's like. A lot of my questions are, am I asking too much? Like, is this not okay to ask here? And she validated my feelings and my concerns a lot because she was just saying, no, we, as a Spanish woman, she was a Spanish woman, which actually was very useful. She told me, no, we have these same complaints here that we are experiencing all of these same problems that you're talking about. You are not alone. It is, even though it might be exacerbated because of you being a foreigner or because of you being Black or whatever those other things are, but it is happening to Spanish people as well. And so don't feel that this is, that you're all alone in this struggle. So that was really great. And she gave me a lot of information. So by the time that I got to birth, I felt very confident. And I went with public health care. Private was telling me that I had to go public because they were assuming that I was going to have a C-section or I was going to have complications. And because of that, they said that they wouldn't have the people on staff to help me. And I'm just like, what kind of hospital doesn't have people on staff
for? What on earth are you paying for? If you're paying for private health care and they're like, well, we don't really want you for this, but we want you for that. They want to choose.
It was really bizarre, and I still don't have a full comprehension of what she was trying to say to me. Not that I didn't understand the words, it's just I don't understand the concept of why you would not be able to, like, if I am having a C-section or there's an emergency, if you are a hospital, you should always be prepared for that, not just, oh, we'll send you off to public. I don't understand.
Were they said that they didn't have the facilities if, like, something were to occur? Was it like that, or just, like, they couldn't be bothered? If it wasn't the way that they wanted it, they weren't interested. Was it more like that?
Well, they wouldn't say that, but they were saying that they wouldn't have the, gosh, I'm terrible with words. And so I'm trying to think of the doctor that deals with blood.
Endocrinologist, I think, is it?
If I lose too much blood, they were saying they wouldn't have a doctor on hand to handle that at all times of the day.
There was a medical reason as to why they, and it would have been to your benefit. Okay, so that's fair enough.
So, I mean, if you tell me no for any reason, I'm not going to try to push you taking care of me. Like, no. I will go to the place where they are willing to, because I don't want to come to the day and they're like, well, I told you we didn't want to for whatever the reason was, whether it be a lie or not.
How old is your child?
She is 1 year and 1 month.
Okay.
I hate when people are like, oh, she's 17 months, but it really is like every month is so valuable at this time. So yeah, she's 13 months.
How do you feel raising a Black daughter in Spain?
I don't know yet. I mean, she's just one, so there's that. She's also surprisingly light. Me and my husband, you've seen pictures of him, we're both about my color, but he's got such a history, a family history, that his dad, on his dad's side, he's got like indigenous culture and even European culture, which skipped a generation and passed right along to this generation, because her cousin is also very light. So I say that because I think I had in my head what it was going to be like, or the things I was going to have to combat for her or help her with looking like me. Mm-hmm. But because, you know, we run the gamut in the color of our skin and being Black, she's going to have different experiences than I'm going to than I had, or that I would have, or a girl that looks like me would have. So I'm just going to raise her, and everything that comes our way, we'll just handle it like with grace. And I just want to always remember to try and protect her peace and raise her to be confident and a decent human being. That's all I can hope for, is that she's a decent, self-sufficient human being who's filled with love in her life. And we can just, like, you know, fight off anything that tries to get in the way of that.
Saying that, do you see yourself continuing to live in Zaragoza in 2 years, in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years' time? Is it a good fit for your family?
Yeah, I think so. I've honestly considered moving to Madrid a lot, because I really like the vibes there, especially being an entrepreneur. Like, it just gives me all the energy, and it really is a place that harbors business people. Mm-hmm. In a way that we don't here. Like, we don't even have, like, I love going to Madrid and just going into a cafe and working. We don't have that in Zaragoza. Not yet. Zaragoza is slowly but surely always growing and developing. And I've seen that a lot in the past 6 years. So I'm sure in another couple of years, I won't be able to say that. But I've considered moving to Madrid, but his family's here. Her grandma's here. She's already away from one of her grandmas, my mom, and I hate that. I would hate to pull her away from another one, because I feel like that's a very valuable relationship for both. There's just nothing like the joy on a grandma's face when they see their little grandbaby. I couldn't do it.
And Colombians, Latinos in particular, they're all about the family. They're all about kind of doing things with the extended family. As you know, somebody lived in Colombia on the Caribbean coast, and you know, you'd see like 17 family members on the beach all together. It's just like, it's just what they do of a Saturday or of a Sunday. In the UK, it's the very opposite.
Yeah, and the United States too. I mean, I've got like a big family, but it's not the same. Like, Rich, one of his aunts is not his, you know, his parents' siblings or his parents' cousins, direct cousins even. It's like from his great grandparents, one of their siblings. Like, it's just like the family tree is gone, branched out so far, which is normal, but they all stay in contact in a way that we don't do in the United States. And I'm assuming that's not common in the UK either.
In the UK, it's very much, you know, in line with the US. How quickly can you get away from your family? How far away can you be from them? And how, you know, when the parents are older, put them in a home or in a care home or something like that, so there's somebody else's responsibility. And it's all of that kind of very egotistical and very selfish culture and mentality, yeah, which is very opposite to Latin and other cultures as well, that are all about, you know, the family staying together, living together for good. It's not always good. It's not always great, and for bad.
I really have found a lot of value in the values of Latin American culture when it comes to family. And that's been one of them. Like, mark my words, I'm sure my mom is marking my words, but I cannot imagine putting her in a home or anything like that. And again, no judgment to anybody who does that, I guess. Like, it depends on the situation, but I want to work to be able to take care of my parents when they can't take care of themselves anymore now. And that is not something, that is definitely something I got from my experience with Latin American cultures, because it's not that common in not in American culture. So I really appreciate that, but it's also been a challenge, I'll say that, because we are all about bootstrapping it, doing it for ourselves, and that sense of community is just not there in the same way. And then, you know, being with someone who everything is like communal, so if you got it, I got it.
We've got it.
Yeah,
we've got it.
Yeah, we all got it. We sharing this one piece of bread.
And the bed and the everything else that goes with it. Yep. That's the Latin culture. What would you say to maybe like a 20-year-old Black person from the States or from any country that hasn't traveled before, but you're American, so naturally that's going to be your perspective, and thinking about moving abroad, moving to Spain? What would you say to somebody in that situation, 20, 21, 22? and thinking about.
I was saying, just do it. Like that's, there's so many buts, there's so many blocks mentally, situationally, that would tell you this is not what you should be doing. It is not the the most intuitive thing to leave where you and probably your ancestors have been forever, or at least the past couple of generations. That's not an easy thing to do. So don't expect it to be easy, but do expect and insist on enjoying all of the moments and taking advantage of all of those moments where you got to learn something, where you got to experience something new, where you embarrass yourself. Like, these are all fantastic moments that are going to shape you in a way that you would not have been formed staying where you have always been. So just do it, take advantage of it. And you have to have a positive attitude, or else you will succumb to just giving in, giving up, and going back to what is, what has always been comfortable for you, even if it might not be the best environment for you.
Thank you. It sounds as though it's not an issue, but is race and are race relations an issue in Zaragoza, or is it a place where people are quite open-minded and quite well-educated and don't say stupid things because they can?
Yeah, racism is definitely well and alive here. I keep telling people, like, we are in the birthplace of colonization here in Europe, right? Like, it started here. They had a meeting and they said, okay, well, you get a piece of this part of Africa, I'm gonna cut this piece off. And then from there, you know, things had just have festered, right? Just in a very, very summarized version of what happened. But with that being said, because the awful things didn't happen so in your face here, people are so willing to just deny its existence. It's an American problem. That's not something that happens here. No, it happens there because it happened here. So the idea that racism doesn't exist is absurd. It definitely
on a day-to-day level, your family is black, or makeup of your family sounds as though it's black, living a very black experience in that region, in that city. On a day-to-day level, are there kind of interactions or are there things said, or is it like everybody's cool where we live and there aren't kind of any issues in terms of race relations where we live?
Well, in comparison to the type of race, it's just a different type of racism. I have my family, yes, I think they're all black here. I'm trying to think, is there anybody not? They all identify as blacks. But, you know, I've got social circles that are not black for sure. So with that being said, it's just the type of racism is different here. My friends, I wouldn't say are actively racist. I think they are actively anti-racist for the most part. And if they hadn't thought about it before, I think my presence in their lives has made them a little bit more anti-racist because it's brought this subject to their right in front of their face, maybe mm-hmm. for the first time. But yeah, no, there's definitely racism here. It's just not as violent, maybe doesn't feel as dangerous, imminently dangerous to me as it does in Texas.
There's nothing on a daily basis that makes you feel like that's happening because of the color of my skin. It's not like that. So like, you're all, for example, looking for a job or looking for an apartment or going to some particular place or comments being said. For example, race relations, it's not that it has to be, because maybe like everything is cool there. You're in quite a big city. You're close to big cities, big cosmopolitan cities. People are a lot more open-minded. Maybe that is the case. But where I live, lots of things are said. Lots of things were said. Like, I mean, where I live in the Canary Islands, which you've been to Tenerife, it's an entry point mm-hmm. for people from the continent, from the continent. And it's also a big melting pot of like this nomadic transient community. So people come. So at times, race relations are not great for different reasons. And also, and other relations aren't great as well because, you know, people are priced out of their homes and all the rest of it. So mm-hmm. like, things that have been tense and continue to be tense. And also, education is a factor within that as well, but that doesn't sound like it's an issue where you live. So it might be a good fit for other Black people. It's more like the question that I'm asking you. Is it like a place where Black people live peacefully and people aren't reminding you on a daily basis of the color of your skin, you know? Is that the case for you?
Yeah, I think that the times, there are definitely times where I'm worried about like moving. Like, we have a great home now, and but I feel like we got lucky with it, and I am terrified of moving and having to risk my standard of what I want for my home because people won't let us live there. I definitely feel that. And then, you know, like I said, I want to buy a home, and I worry about if they're going to let me buy a home. It sounds crazy to have to say, but I do worry about that. And I do think that there are people who will at least be off put in these when I present myself for these situations, that maybe they don't get a lot of people who look like me requesting, you know, financing or things like that. But I do think that it's a safe place to live. I do think that I'm safe here. Mm-hmm. That is definite. I think it's just a safe city in general, but there are still barriers. There are definitely barriers. Like, we just have to, I don't think there's anywhere we can go where it's, honestly, if
that's,
you know,
always the question. That's why I want to do these interviews for, because it's like, where are we living, and life is cool and life is good and we're able to prosper. So when you said yes, I was like so happy, because you don't live in Madrid. It's one thing living in London, living in New York, living in Paris, living in Berlin, and it's another thing living in, like, you know, Zaragoza or other parts of the world where it's not as diverse and cosmopolitan and educated people aren't educated. So it's very different. And so I wanted to kind of, you know, show that somebody is living in a different part of Spain, not rural Spain, because that's not where you are. You're in a big city and close to the capitals, and having a great experience, and you're flourishing, and you're working and minding your own business, running your own business.
Minding my Black owned business, yes.
It's a soca song. What am I, my business? It's a soca song, so.
But you know what? Can I add that I think it's important to recognize that being a Black person in Spain here is not the same experience for all of us, right? We've all got different levels of privilege or different levels or types of struggle. And so a couple of years ago, I did the Black Lives Matter protest here in Zaragoza. And that was really the first time that I was really interacting with a lot of other Black people in Zaragoza. And they had totally different perspectives than me. They were a little bit more pissed off. And a lot of them were like first generation from African countries here. And so I can't speak for everybody here, because I don't want to speak. How do I say that? I just don't know. I think I might have some privilege that some people in our community do not have. Mm-hmm. And so my experience is not everybody's experience here. I think the fact that we call ourselves expats, that alone comes with privilege that, you know, somebody from some other countries are not experiencing. So the experiences that I have as far as racism also come with me being able to say I'm American and all of that, and knowing that that gives me a little bit more leeway in different spaces. So
about acknowledging privileges that we have, and I know that I have privilege. I also know that first I'm seen in Gran Canaria, first I'm seen as African and from the African continent, and no matter what I say sometimes in certain situations, they already have in their mind that I'm from Africa. Today, this morning, I was in a shop, in a cafe, and this morning I was Cuban. You know, it depends on who I'm speaking to, but there's never the assumption that I'm from the UK. And yeah. It's always like I'm from African country or from a Latin speaking country. And then even when I tell people that I'm from the UK, that like it doesn't resonate with them, because they're so kind of blindsided by what they think a Black person is and where they, you know, like the yeah. ideas and the notions. And I'm not saying that we don't have different experiences, because I know that, but that's why I want to talk about them and say, you know, for you, racism doesn't seem to be an issue in Zaragoza. For you, for me here in Gran Canaria, it's a hotbed of like a real shit that's going on because mm-hmm. of the geographical location of where we are. Mm-hmm. So, which is great. what one negative and two positive things would you say about Spain or about Zaragoza? Or yeah, what yeah, one negative and two positive things would you say about the country or the city? Or
One negative, one, if I had to say one negative, there's not enough diversity. There's just not, in the way that people think, the way that people live, you know, it's just graduate from college, get a job that you can then retire from. And that is expected so much that when you do something different, it is hard to, for society to accommodate that. And the example that I have is doing things like getting financing. So if I want to get a house and I want to get a mortgage for that, I don't have a normal job. And I actually, my income comes directly from the United States primarily. And so I'm not even autonomo here at the moment. And so it's just, that means that I have to figure out a different way to get that mortgage, because they don't even value different forms of income from different places or different forms of working and careers, because they, it's just one set lifestyle is the accepted way of life. So I don't even, I mean, culturally, yes, there's a lack of diversity, but I think that we could have some different perspectives and embrace a little bit more of different varieties of life.
And then two positives, what would you say, whether it's about your city or about the country as a whole, what would you say?
The positive, the wine is so cheap here.
You're in the wine region, you're close to the wine region, aren't you? You're close to La Rioja and stuff like that, aren't you?
Yeah. So it's just so, like, we just have here the food, they're high quality foods that are so expensive, like saffron. If I tried to get like a little thing of saffron in the United States, it would be like 10 times below the quality that you find here, and it would be like 20 times more expensive. I'm talking about $20 for that little tiny container that we see at the store. And it's, we just have grade A food products here, grade A.
The quality of produce is very, very high. I would agree with you there. And there are lots of pastures where you are, you know, lots of rural land, so that's great. I'm thinking if there's anything else that I would like to ask you. Is there anything else that you'd like to say or ask me, or anything that you'd like to share that I haven't asked you or that you'd like to talk about?
No, I think we covered like my whole life in Spain, really. Everything, business, love life, family. Yeah. I think that anybody who wants to reach out to me to ask me questions, feel free to do so.
Where can they find you? Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I forgot the name of my Instagram because I'm the worst. It's the.eliteva on Instagram. And you can DM me or follow me, and I'm happy to help you guys out however you need.
Thank you.
Or however I can, I should say.
That's cool. Do you have anything else, any questions or anything else that you'd like to say?
No, I just appreciate you reaching out to me to do this. And I hope that you continue doing these podcasts because they give so much information. I love connecting or feeling connected to the diaspora, whether that be the expat diaspora or the Black diaspora around the world. I love hearing that people are doing awesome things.
It's great to be sharing the stories and the journeys. And as I said, I was so happy that, like you said, yes, because as I said, you're in a different part of the country, you're doing something different. And so it's just to shine a light on the fact that there are other ways of doing things, there are other places that we can live and flourish. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your energy and for your honesty. And I wish you all the best. For anyone who would like to share their story, so if you're a Black expat in Spain and you would like to share your story on our series, please reach out to me, let me know. My name is Jeanette and I'm the Colombian Catwoman. This series is called Black Expats in Spain. If you'd like to learn Spanish, then by all means reach out to me and I can help you with that as well. Get me an email, jce101@hotmail.co.uk. Please like, you know it makes a difference. It's the 21st century. You've got to share, subscribe, and the word out there. So I think that's it from me. Follow me on Insta. I am the daughter of Angela. Thank you very much, Kayla, for your time, your energy, and goodbye. Overnight from the Colombian Catwoman.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. It's an honor.